Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
Well, ever since the day in the Garden of Eden when Adam and Eve tried to escape the gaze of God, humans have been devising new ways to hide, from the chilling secret headquarters of the Nazis to the secluded gentlemen's clubs of London, from the Chapel of the Holy Grail in Spain to the private banks of Switzerland. The world is filled with closed doors where people hide their precious goods, their sacred objects, or even themselves. Scottish writer Gerald Warner has been unearthing the mysteries of some of these hiding places around the world, and he's written this absolutely fascinating book called Secret Places, Hidden Sanctuaries. And he's with us now from Scotland. Gerald, welcome to Open House.
Good evening.
Tell me how you got the idea to write this absolutely fascinating book.
Oh, well, the idea came really from my colleague and friend Stephen Klimchuk, with whom I co-wrote the book. He felt that he had travelled so much and visited so many odd and interesting places, he'd become intrigued by this human instinct, you say, to hide away, as Freudians might almost say, go back to the womb, and to form secret organizations and exclusive clubs and bolt holes of every kind. So we decided to explore this together, and the book is the result.
Yeah, well, it's a fascinating book. I want to, reveal some of these secret places that you've discovered to the world, because you've certainly uncovered some absolutely amazing stories. Let's start with America, then we'll head over to Europe, and there'll be some pretty amazing bits in between. Let's start with the Mount Weather Emergency Operations Center in Virginia. Tell me about this. This sounds absolutely fascinating.
Well, it is fascinating. It's really right out of Tom Clancy. In fact, one of Tom Clancy's books had a venue that was based on it. It's 75 miles from Washington. It's called Mount Weather because originally it was a meteorological station. It was sold to the American government in 1902 for the ridiculously cheap price of $1,300. After the Cuban Missile Crisis, it was turned into a government refuge for all the senior members of the American government. There is a shadow government inside this mountain where all the different offices of Secretary of State are replicated, and civil servants play the part of the government minister right up until the point where, if there were a nuclear war, an asteroid strike, some kind of natural disaster, or most likely of all, terrorist outrage, the members of the American government would be rushed in there, including the president, and would be able, with sophisticated communications, to continue the government undeterred by whatever was happening outside.
Sarah.
It's a massive settlement. It has dormitories for 2,000 people, a freshwater lake, so they'd never run out of drinking water underground, streets and a hospital, every facility imaginable. On 9/11, it has become an open secret that Dick Cheney was rushed there. Very shortly afterwards, he was removed to another secret government facility called Site R at Raven Rock. But enough witnesses saw him there. We even have the story of a man in the local small town who was standing at the bar and turned round and saw the vice president standing at his elbow. It was as indiscreet as that. What we did discount was the evidence of a woman who claimed to have seen Air Force One fly into the side of the mountain. The doors are 34 tons heavy and 5 feet thick, but they're not broad enough to admit an aircraft, so I think we can safely discount that.
Oh, that's fascinating. So this is, like you said, it's a shadow government. It is staffed. People are doing paperwork and doing their everyday duties. There's even a replica Oval Office. It's basically ready to go should something like, you suggested before, an asteroid or, you know, nuclear attack or terrorist attack or something like that happen.
Oh, absolutely. It's an underground Washington.
Fascinating.
It's, there are 6,500 names, we believe, on the VIP list of those who would be taken there in the event of a national emergency. But their wives are not allowed to come. And that's why Earl Warren, when he was the Chief Justice of the United States, refused to have his name on the list, because he said if there was going to be a nuclear war, he wasn't leaving his wife. a touch of loyalty there. That,
yes, there you are. Mount Weather Emergency Operations Center in Virginia. Okay, off to the secluded island of Svalbard in Norway. What, there's some sort of collection of seeds that could save the world?
Eventually, millions of them. Svalbard is not, strictly speaking, an island. It's an archipelago of islands. It's inside the Arctic Circle and has only belonged to Norway since 1925. It's run jointly by the Norwegian government and the Global Crop Diversity Trust. The idea is to preserve the seeds of every foodstuff in the world so that in case of some natural disaster, they would be able to regenerate these foodstuffs as soon as anything approaching normality was restored. The vault itself is 390 feet inside a sandstone mountain. The refrigeration keeps the seeds at a temperature of minus 18 degrees Celsius. But even if the refrigeration failed, and this is one of the reasons the site was chosen, the temperature is so low in any case that there would almost certainly be no harm done to the crops.
Mm.
There has been one major disqualification discovered. One of the reasons the site was decided on was because there was no record of significant tectonic activity in the area. But ironically, just 5 days before the official opening, the biggest earthquake ever recorded in Norway struck, with its epicenter just 87 miles away and measuring 6.2 on the Richter scale.
Mm.
So there is now a concern about the possibility of earthquakes. There was also a concern among conspiracy theorists about the fact that organizations like the Rockefeller Foundation and Bill Gates have an investment in this, and some people say that this could be sinister, is there an attempt being made here, considering that GM seeds are self-destructible, to make some kind of a corner in certain foodstuffs. The jury is out on that one way or the other, but some critics are concerned about it.
Yes, okay. We'll have to talk a little bit more about the whole conspiracy theory in just a moment, because, of course, when we're talking about secrets, they certainly abound. This is Open House across the nation. Gerald Warner is the co-author of this simply fascinating book, Secret Places, Hidden Sanctuaries. He and his co-author have basically just written about so many secret places around the world and what they're doing right now as we speak. All right, well, you call this one of the most evil places on Earth in your book, the Velvesborg Castle in Germany. And boy, just from the little bit that I've read about it, it really does sound evil.
Yes, I would clearly admit that this is the darkest chapter in the book. The book has many shades and ends on a very lighthearted note, but this really is the epitome of evil. It is an ancient medieval German castle of distinguished architecture, and it was bought in the 1930s by Heinrich Himmler, the head of the SS, at the suggestion of a mystical man called Karl Maria Willigut. And Willigut persuaded Himmler to make this the spiritual center of the SS. It was devoted to a strange combination of a pagan Nordic pseudo-religion and sort of esoteric mumbo-jumbo that the Nazis invented themselves. The center of it was a round table because it was really a sort of perverted version of Christian chivalry. Hmm. They had a round table modeled on King Arthur's and 12 knights who were all SS officers of Gruppenführer status. There, Himmler used to have imaginary conversations with the pagan King Henry the Fowler of 1,000 years earlier, and later in his life, there is reason to believe that Himmler believed himself to be the reincarnation of Henry the Fowler.
Mm.
But the real sinister aspect of it is that this pseudo-spirituality was used to brainwash SS men into steeling themselves to committing the final solution in the belief that it had some kind of spiritual purpose.
Yes, yes.
Many people have often asked, how could the Nazis do it? How could they commit the crimes that they did? And unfortunately, the explanation largely lies at Wevelsburg. They had convinced themselves that they were fulfilling some noble destiny, and that if the early stages of it were unpleasant, they still had to be faced up to, and that that there was a religious, albeit a pagan religious sanction for this. Very chilling indeed.
Absolutely. indeed there actually was some sort of spiritual force happening behind Hitler and all those horrific acts that actually happened. It does make a lot of sense. Let's talk about some other religious sites then, religious sites with a little bit more of a positive spin to them. The Sancta Sanctorum, the Holy of Holies in Rome.
Yes, it's inside the Lateran Palace in Rome. It's a very small private chapel or oratory. A lot of people think that the mother church of Catholicism is St. Peter's, simply because the Pope lives there. But in fact, the Pope's primary church, still in Rome, is the Basilica of St. John Lateran. And inside the Lateran Palace, there is this very small chapel, which is fenced off with a grill, and to which nobody is admitted. The Latin inscription along the top says, there is no holier place in all the world, which is a strong statement, and only the Pope may say Mass at the small altar inside. I don't know when he last did so. We know from witnesses that in the 14th century, it was guarded round the clock by teams of four men armed with maces in case anybody tried to get near the great treasure that hangs there. This is an image of Christ called the Christ Akairopoietos, meaning, it's a Greek word, meaning not made by human hands. Mm-hmm. There are three or four images of Christ in the world which have that title. They're all totally different. The chapel itself is embellished with mosaics and porphyry stone and frescoes, and it really is a tiny center of great beauty. It's not very large at all, and it is possible for visitors to see into it from a distance through a grill, but nobody is actually allowed to enter it.
There you are. This is Open House Across the Nation. Author Gerald Warner is with us, co-author of this book, Secret Places, Hidden Sanctuaries. There's also a lot of strange sites around the world that claim to be the resting place of particular religious objects, and one of those, of course, is the Chapel of the Ark. Tell me about that.
Yes, that's at Aksum in Ethiopia. The claim is that this chapel, which is very closely guarded and totally secret, contains the Ark of the Covenant. You know, we're really in Indiana Jones territory here. I haven't been there myself. I think my colleague, if I remember right, my colleague Stephen went to Aksum, but of course he didn't get anywhere near the Ark of the Covenant, if it is in there. Now, it would be easy to dismiss this as a lot of hocus. Nobody really knows, because the way it functions is a priest is selected as the guardian of the Ark for life, and he is the only man on earth who is actually permitted to see it. And when he dies, another priest is selected, and he is the only person on earth who can see it. It is so private that even the Emperor Haile Selassie, who was so much revered, was not allowed to enter the chapel and see the Ark. So the question is there any possibility that the genuine Ark of the Covenant is actually in there? It's impossible to ascertain, obviously, but the scraps of evidence that I would put together and leave people to decide for themselves are as follows. There is undoubtedly a Hebrew connection with Ethiopia. The liturgy of the Ethiopian Orthodox Church is partly Coptic and partly Judaic. The emperor was known as the Lion of Judah. He has the Star of David among his emblems. And if you remember, some years ago, an Ethiopian-descended tribe was recognized in Israel as bona fide Jews. So there is definitely a Hebrew connection. That doesn't prove anything in particular, but it does suggest a cultural link. And there must be something there of some value, or this would not have built up. But, you know, who knows?
That's right. This is probably a good time to raise the question, of course, about all of this, Gerald, is just your facts, because some people will be saying, hang on a sec, this all sounds just a little bit kind of conspiracy theorish, and we've all these secrets that have been uncovered about these strange places. What do you say to people who might start to be kind of going, who is this guy that Sheridan has on Open House right now?
Well, I would freely admit that probably, well, at least 50% of the research was done by my colleague, Stephen. But the whole tone of the book is especially in the early chapters, is debunking. We have been very careful not to swallow conspiracy theories very much at all, but we do feel obliged to mention them, to recount the less crazy ones, so that people can consider them themselves, perhaps do a little bit of investigation of their own, and make their own minds up. Mm. The tone of the book is broadly skeptical, but occasionally we came across something where we said to ourselves, you know, so much else is bunk, but there is definitely a mystery here. Not necessarily a fact, but definitely a mystery, and it is intriguing, and there's very little way of resolving it.
The Roslyn Chapel in Scotland, made famous by the Da Vinci Code, that's one of the things that you kind of explore, I guess, in that debunking kind of manner. Just tell us about that.
Yes, well, the whole sort of Da Vinci Code theory, and it did feature in the film, is that there is a Templar connection, a connection between the Knights Templar and Roslyn Chapel, and that this link is through the St. Clair family, who were Earls of Roslyn and Earls of Orkney, and very powerful noblemen in medieval Scotland, and that one of them was a Knight Templar, and that the order somehow survived, and then it morphed into Masonic connections in later times. Now, this really is, I'm afraid, one can say with total confidence, absolute nonsense, that the Templars were abolished between 1308 and 1312. Roslyn Chapel was only founded in 1456, long after the Templars were extinct. At the time of their suppression, there were only two elderly Templars in Scotland. And when they were put on trial in Edinburgh, as they were being tried in countries around Europe, the head of the Sinclair family and his son and heir, who were not Templars, both gave evidence at the trial against the Templars and testified to their guilt, which hardly suggests that they were supporters of the order or likely to do anything to perpetuate it. Hmm. Then the other crazy theory that the Sinclairs discovered America before Columbus, and that carvings in the chapel represent New World corn. This has been disproved. In fact, the carvings are stylized representation of native wheat and strawberries. There really are no grounds at all for the bogus mystery that attaches to Roslyn.
And yet, at the time, Dan Brown was saying that the Da Vinci Code was actually based on historical fact. That's the interesting thing about all of this. Let's end on the Chapel of the Holy Grail in Valencia. You mentioned before Indiana Jones. Well, anybody who's listening to this will probably say, well, here we go. Here's the place where the Holy Grail is supposed to be kept. That's basically the myth, isn't it?
Yeah, well, in European history, mythology, whatever, the ultimate symbol of mystery is the Holy Grail, is the chalice that was used at the Last Supper, which Galahad and Percival and all these medieval knights were legendarily said to have set out in search of. Now, there is a chapel, the Chapel of the Santa Calice, in the Cathedral of Valencia in Spain, and it's been turned over to this purpose. The relic that is kept there is a cup made of, I think it's called Oriental Carnelian. It has been dated from the first century. It is definitely old enough to be the Holy Grail. Mm-hmm. It's of Corinthian design, which is exactly what a reasonably well-to-do family would have used on a special occasion in Palestine at the time of our Lord. The elaborate jeweled base with 28 pearls and gold and so on was added in the Middle Ages. It also is extraordinary among the other things that we examined by being very well documented. Now, the tradition is that the owner of the house where the Last Supper was held preserved the cup and gave it to St. Peter, that when St. Peter left Jerusalem for Rome, he took it with him, and that the early popes in Rome used it when they were saying Mass. But under the persecution of the Emperor Valerian in 258, St. Lawrence, just before he was martyred, sent it to Huescar in Spain, which was his native town. It was venerated there until the year 713, when the local bishop fled before a Muslim invasion and took it to a monastery. It remained in that monastery for a considerable time, and later a Spanish king called Martin swapped a gold chalice for the plain cup, and it became his property. It was handed over on the 26th of September 1399, and the documentation survives. King Alfonso V then brought it to Valencia in 1424, and once again, there are notarial documents that testify to these transactions, and it's been in Valencia ever since, except for a three-year break during the Spanish Civil War, when it was snatched out of the cathedral just 3 hours before the communists burned it and kept in a safe place and then returned in 1939. Again, one cannot be absolutely prescriptive about this, but we felt it was one of the relics or objects of mystery that, because of its legal documentation and royal chanceries and so on, had a better documented pedigree than most, and it was taken seriously enough for Pope Benedict XVI on his visit to Spain to say Mass with it, using it on the 9th of July 2006. So it has a degree of putative credibility that doesn't attach to many of the other objects that we've examined.
Mm-hmm. Well, it has been very fascinating to talk to you, Gerald. Thanks for joining us on Open House tonight.
Pleasure.
Yeah, Gerald Warner, co-author of this really interesting book, Secret Places, Hidden Sanctuaries, Uncovering Mysterious Sites, Symbols and Societies.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.